Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Live Ventures year-end call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. Please note this conference is being recorded. I will be standing by should you need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn today's program over to Mr. Berlin Johnson, Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Live Ventures Incorporated fiscal year-end, September 30th, 2017 conference call. Earlier today, the company filed a press release and an extension to file our annual report Form 10-K within the prescribed extension period provided under Rule 12b-25 of the Securities Exchange Act of 1934. This press release and associated filing can be found on our website, www.live-ventures.com, in the Investor Relations section, as well as on the SEC website, www.sec.gov. My name is Verlin Johnson, Chief Financial Officer, and joining me today is John Isaac, Chief Executive Officer. Please note that some of the remarks you will hear today may contain forward-looking statements about the company's performance. As well, there may be forward-looking statements made during the Q&A session that follow our prepared remarks. These statements are neither promises nor guarantees, and there are a number of risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those set forth in these forward-looking statements. Additional information concerning factors that could cause actual results to materially differ from those in these forward-looking statements is contained in our filing, when available, in periodic reports filed with the SEC, copies of which are available on our website or may be requested directly from the company. Forward-looking statements are made as of today's date, and we do not undertake any obligation to update any forward-looking statements made during today's call. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today for our year-end 2017 call. Our Form 10-K filing has been extended largely due to working through and finalizing the purchase accounting adjustments for vintage stock within the measurement period allowed. We expect to file our Form 10-K shortly within the extension time provided. This is the first year under audit with our new auditor, BDO. The process has been a good one for the company and its personnel. The process has been rigorous and thorough. Some of the areas that BDO has been especially helpful in are properly accounting for our leases, prepaids, long-term assets, gift cards, inventory, and purchase accounting. Taking this step to change auditors early in the year was a large one for Live Ventures, but the right one given the value that has already been delivered to the company. It has helped our people be more proactive and responsive to the increased expectation level of what BDO brings to our company and shareholders. Our 10-K filing will provide you with many of the operational and financial details we will discuss in general today. There are some highlights that I can answer today. Revenues for Live Ventures will exceed $152 million for the year. Vintage revenues will exceed $72 million since acquisition in November 16. Marquis had record revenues of over $79 million, a 9.9 year-over-year percentage change. Cash on hand at the end of the year was $3.9 million. Availability under our revolving lines of credit at year-end was $8.1 million. Cash flow from operations for the year should be $9.5 million. The notes payable net of debt issuance costs at year-end, $77.4 million at year-end. All three segments of our business were profitable for the year. For additional financial information and details, I invite you to review our press release distributed this afternoon and view our 10-K filing on either our website or the SEC's website when available. Our focus remains on seeking out the best acquisition opportunities and growing our existing portfolio of companies while minimizing our cost of capital and enhancing shareholder value. With that, I thank you very much for your participation on this call and your continued interest in Live Ventures Incorporated. At this time, John has some prepared remarks, and then we will take questions.
So we've had a great year, everybody. We're very excited for what transpired. Our revenues are up 92% since last year. Record revenues for the company ever, $152 million. So last year, and our fiscal year starts October 1 and ends September 30, as a reminder. So last year, we started off the year with our largest acquisition to date, which was Vinted Stock. And with me today, by the way, is Mr. Rodney Springs, who is the president and CEO of Vintage Stock. He'll be available to answer any questions that you may have. We then proceeded. We announced the appointment of our chief financial officer, Verlin, and we are extremely happy and pleased with what accounting has done with us so far this year. Vintage Stock then announced that we opened 9 stores at Vintage, and they are all performing very, very well. Not too long after the company terminated, our S-3 registration statement with the SEC. This allowed us to effectively raise equity or cash for stock. We canceled that voluntarily with the SEC because we believed that our company was undervalued and that we would not be issuing any shares. So we canceled that. The company changed its independent registered accounting firm, and we selected BDO. And we've been very pleased with BDO and what they've done and how thorough they have been as it relates to our accounting. They've found numerous things for us that you will see in the 10-K. 2 lawsuits were filed against us as a result of an article that was written online. This was earlier in the year. We were served with 1 class action and 1 derivative lawsuit. We called those 2 lawsuits bogus, baseless, and meritless. We got both lawsuits dismissed just recently. And so although this was a distraction for the company, we believe it actually benefited the company and long-term shareholders, as it gave us the opportunity to repurchase our shares at what we believe was a great deal at the time. So far, the company has acquired a total of 116,000 shares on the open market since the inception of our stock repurchase program. About 66,000 of those were during our fiscal year. Our average stock price on our repurchase was about $10 a share. So based on, we are about 30 or 35% in the money, but if I'm looking at after hours activity, we've essentially doubled our investment since our repurchase of all of our stock. In another set of very good news, in an effort to clean up our capital structure, the company repurchased some of our Series E preferred shares. This was a class of shares that existed well before I joined the company. I believe it was in the year 2000 or 2001, during the years of YP.com. We were able to acquire 40% of the total outstanding shares of the Series E for a grand total of $4,000. So, in another more good news, we are in contract with a new lender at the Vintage Stock level. This proposed financing is expected to close in the next few weeks or maybe a couple of months, I would say. I'm instructed to say, of course, there are no guarantees. However, it looks great, and we have signed with them, and they are doing their due diligence. They visited the company, and they are working diligently on getting this financing done. Once this financing closes, when and if it does, it should help save the company and reduce its interest expense. Did you want to comment on Marquee and Vintage? I mean, that's all for me at a high level. Let me see if there's any questions here. If anyone has any questions, we will be happy to answer those.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and 1 on your touch-tone telephone.
John Flynn, can we take the call, Lynn, from John Flynn?
John, your line is open.
How are you today?
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Happy holidays.
Thank you. You too.
In your opinion, what do you think has kept the stock price so depressed until today?
I really don't know. I mean, we can all have our different opinions. I mean, it could be numerous things. It could be that we haven't really filed any financials for almost, 90 days now, or even more than that. It could be anticipation. I really don't know. Your guess is as good as mine.
Okay, I didn't know if you know, there was a tremendous amount of shorting going on sometimes that happened in these markets, or...
Maybe, it could be so. I mean, we don't really pay too much attention to the day-to-day trading of our stock. I mean, obviously, if there's something going on that's illegal, you know, if it's brought to our attention, we'll have to deal with it. But, you know, again, we're really focused on the long-term value of our company. Shareholder equity and our financial performance is of utmost priority to us, you know, and we think that the stock price will follow over time gradually. So we don't get too concerned with the day-to-day trading of our stock, but we're very pleased to see that the stock is up after hours, so we're happy about that.
Okay, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Let's talk to David.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good, how are you, David? Heard your name before.
Good. Yeah, hey, I got a question, just a couple quickies. On the original live deal, you had said all three segments were profitable. Could you share a little light on what is the key driver, and then how are you allowed to talk any about the December season for the vintage stock?
I can maybe refer to it a little bit. We don't have, obviously, we're still in the season. It's December 27, but yeah, your question was, are we profitable? Where again?
He was asking
in the original live.
I can address that.
Verlin can answer that.
Profits between the segments. Obviously, our services segment is relatively small, with revenues under $1 million. Again, consistently profitable. However, with regards to Marquee, we've already shared that Marquee's revenues were up 9.9% year over year. Their profits also were, you know, excellent in terms of the same comparable time frame. They continue to outperform and steadily perform relative to our expectations. Vintage obviously is new this year, so there's really no comparison year over year. But Vintage, you know, was clearly profitable for the year, turned in excellent results in terms of the time period that we've owned them. I will tell you that operating earnings are pretty split between the two two remaining segments, but that's about as much detail as I can go into at this point.
Okay, and do you guys have an estimated time frame on when you will file your financial report?
We're going to file it as soon as possible, but the statutory limit is within 15 days of normal due date. In our specific case, it's 15 days within the 29th.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
As a reminder, to star and one if you'd like to ask a question.
Marquee has had an excellent year too. Verlin company invested about $8 million in new equipment. A new mag extruder machine, 15 new twisters. Those have all been installed. The twisters are operational. The extruder will be operational in the next coming weeks. So we are very confident that this will push Marquee even to a new level. It has increased its capacity. It can take on more, I think close to 15 million pounds at a time. This was work that was previously outsourced to competition. Now we brought it in-house, so it will reduce our cost of goods and should increase our bottom line and our bottom line as well. Let's take a question from Jacob from Wells Fargo.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Question for you on the year-end revenues coming in at $152 million or so. Looks to be kind of right on par with Q3 revenues. Is that something that you expect? Are you not paying too much concern with one quarter of the next revenues? How do you kind of see that falling in line relative to the previous quarters in the fiscal year?
We feel that it was pretty much in line, with the exception of an uptick for Marquee. Vintage's quarter was is typically, that's their seasonally lower quarter of the year. But Marquee, came in with a very strong quarter. So we're very pleased with the results in our fourth quarter.
Got it. Thanks.
Nick Reed.
Nick, your line is open.
Yeah. I appreciate you doing this. This is actually one of my first earnings calls, so I'm still new to everything. But didn't catch... Hey, thanks. I didn't catch the what the revenue was for the... not the Marquee, not the Vintage, the Live.
Well, Live is made up of three segments, and we have a retail online segment, we have a manufacturing segment, and we have a services segment. The total of those segments add up to over $152 million for the year. Our services segment is the smallest. It's under $1 million in annual revenue. And the other two segments are pretty well split in terms of revenue evenly.
Okay. And you said the Vintage one is relatively new. So... Did you touch base on what the percent revenue was that for that? I didn't catch that.
It's approximately a little less than half of our revenue. We acquired Vintage in November 3rd of 2016. So we only have right at about 11 months worth of operations for them in this fiscal year.
Okay.
We've owned Vintage for less than a year, so we'll have less than a year's worth of performance. I think we close in November, so we're about 6 weeks or so shy of full year ownership. But this is the first time that Vintage stock gets consolidated in our 10-K, which is actually the primary reason for the delay in our 10-K.
Okay. Thank you, and I appreciate you guys doing this.
William from Merrill Lynch.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Just a couple questions. I know the lawsuit was settled, which was terrific. I thought it was going to happen, but there's not been a lot of news coming out on the company for the last quarter. I was wondering if that had anything to do with the lawsuit being this quiet. And the second thing is, I know we purchased shares in the repurchase at low prices. Is there a current authorized purchase still in place if shares remain low to take advantage of the lower price?
It's still in place. We have up to $10 million authorized, so there's still quite a bit available to us. That's number one. Number two, no, we have not been quiet because of any losses. We've tried to, of course, update the public and make the public aware of any news that we think would be worthy or material for you. One thing that I would like to mention to you and everybody else on the call is I invite you to like our page on Facebook, because a lot of times we have news that may be not really worthy of quote-unquote a press release, but we do post a lot of content on Facebook. We have a small PR department that was part of our initiative as it relates to keeping shareholders up to date. So we have videos and all interviews, all sorts of things on the Facebook page. So please, facebook.com/liveventuresinc, facebook.com/liveventuresinc, all one word. Please like us there and leave comments. And we're very, communicative there.
Okay. Well, keep doing what you're doing. Stock's undervalued, and eventually, the market's got to recognize you.
Thank you very much for your support.
Thank you.
Scott Lander.
Oh, hi there, John.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you. How you doing?
Very good, thank you.
All right. Hey, I've been a fairly long-time investor, kind of rode the stock up and down and up and down. And the original concept of the daily deals thing, it seems to kind of have faded away, and you've changed your direction in how to build the company. And I was wondering if that would be continuing, and also why have you decided to go a different direction in acquisitions instead of building the original business model?
We focused, we've changed, as you know, the company name back in 2015, and we went straight to the holding company model. We like that model a lot better. We think it'll bring more long-term value for shareholders. I understand the valuation may be a little bit different if we were a technology company, but we really believe in building our balance sheet and improving and strengthening our profit and loss statements. And we really like the model that we're in now, and I don't think we will, deviate from it. We're always on the lookout for new acquisitions. We're looking at many right now, a few, I should say, maybe, all of which could be good candidates, all of which would increase and improve our numbers even more. So, I the daily deal was, we dabbled with it way back when. We still have it on, but we don't dedicate too many resources to it.
Can I have one follow-up question too?
Sure.
Okay. So the bundling of companies acquisition-wise, these two ones that have done very well over the last year, they're quite different markets. And so is it – I think you mentioned that you're kind of going for – I thought you said similar markets, but these seem so diverse. One's retail and one's manufacturing. So is your proposition, like, if you can find a business that's either undervalued but in a growing business, like, what's your philosophy on that? Like,
we're looking for companies that, there's a few things that we look for any companies. Number one is a good management team. We've been extremely fortunate with Mr. Tim Bailey and Mr. Rodney Springs, at the helm of both of our subsidiaries. But management team is key, number one. Number two, the company must have a history of, pretty strong financials. We're not investing into startups or companies that have a big dream. We're really focusing on the last several years of financials prior to our ownership, and if we are looking for something that's stable, something that's been consistent, and we're avoiding companies that have too much volatility or too much concentration in one industry or another. Anything really that makes sense. On our website, we have a form. If you've got something that you think would work for us, somebody can fill out the form and we'll be in contact with whoever fills out the form very quickly. We're looking usually for much larger deals. We're looking at probably companies that have no less than $10 million of annual pre-tax profits. So if you know of any, please be in contact with us.
All right, terrific. All right, well, thanks. Well, good luck going forward, and I'm on board for the long term, so hope things continue to grow.
Appreciate your support.
You got it. Thanks.
Thank you. As a reminder, it is star and one if you would like to ask a question.
So we were talking about Marquee.
Yeah.
$8 million invested in new equipment, the extruder machine, 15 new twisters. The twisters are already operational. I think we've seen some of those effects in the last couple quarters. The new extruder machine, I know, was a pretty big undertaking for Tim and his team. those are already installed, but we'll start seeing the effects of those, I think, in the next quarter or two. We're looking at a bolt-on acquisition, potentially. No promises, but a few candidates that are possibly good for us. We have a question from Larry from Merrill Lynch.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the call. First off, on Marquise, you talk about this new expansion. Can you elaborate a little bit on how much additional volume that can bring to the company? And also on Vintage Stock, you said you opened 9 stores this year. What are the so-called expansion plans for Vintage going forward, stores next year and the following years, other states that they may be going into? And if you can also talk about possibly same-store sales at those Vintage outlets.
Why don't we start with the Vintage question? Maybe I'll turn the mic over to Rodney. Rodney, maybe you could answer his question and maybe even elaborate on what we discussed earlier about how you're doing, how good you're doing this month and everything else. Go ahead.
Okay. Appreciate that question. Somebody had asked earlier how our December's going, and you know, we've got some really good strong numbers out of those former Hastings stores that we acquired out of the bankruptcy court. There were 7 stores acquired last year, and through the December 1st through 24th period, those stores, even though it was a soft opening, we're comparing against last year because we rushed to get them open for the Christmas season, they're actually up 60% year-over-year in sales. Overall, the company in that same time period with all stores combined is up 6%. We still have, you know, another week in December. This last week is very strong. Our biggest time of year is December. It's our strongest month. Our second largest month is February. And so the January, February, March time frame, because of tax return money and cold weather, people staying indoors, is a very strong, profitable time of the year for our company. We opened those 7 stores all at once. There was actually a Vintage Stock branded store that opened in December last year, and another large footprint, 25,000 square foot Entertainment Mart store. There's a former Hastings that opened in St. Joe, Missouri in May of this past year. Going forward, we are looking to open basically 2 to 4 new locations in fiscal 2018, probably 1 per quarter. And one of the things that we've been working on that John had mentioned earlier in Verland was the refinance of the company. So we've been putting a lot of effort and energy to make sure that we get that done to increase shareholder value, because our cost of the financing will drop fairly significantly, which is a good thing. We're also expecting the box office, which has been one of the drags a little bit this year, where you've had some off months. We'll be positive 1 month, then we'll be off a little bit. The box office was much weaker this year. There were only 7 300 million titles versus 9 in 2016. We expect more blockbuster titles in 2018, with Avengers Jurassic World leading the way. There's more comic-based titles like Black Panther, another X-Men movie, some things like that will drive store traffic. And since we're a one-stop shop for the toys, comics, music, soundtracks, games, and movies, these titles will drive sales in all the categories we carry. So we do expect a good, strong 2018. The video game turn is happening. We expected that with Nintendo Switch coming out in March of this year. That system got us back to where we have 3 video game systems that we are selling video games for, instead of going from 4 to 2 when the previous generation was discontinued in 2016. So we're seeing large increases in the double digits on new video game sales and hardware. And in our market, you got to remember that sales will lag on the used side until you get the large installed base of the hardware. Sony and Microsoft had large back-end rebates this year, which drove their systems down below $200, which had a large sales volume for them, putting their systems into homes and household penetration. Those type of things will eventually, we've had a little bit of margin contraction because we're selling more new, but over 2018 and 2019, we expect margin to start increasing as more titles are available for customers to trade into us and to sell to us, which, again, our margins on used product is significantly higher than it is on the new. So we do continue to see increased growth in same-store sales moving into 2018, especially late 18 and 19. I hope that answers your question. There was a lot of information there, but
yeah,
that kind of tells you what's going on.
Any new states that you're going to go into?
We actually, because of that Hastings acquisition, ended up dropping into Utah, Idaho, New Mexico. We were already in Texas, but in theory, we would expand out from around those stores. So we have a lot of different sites that we're currently evaluating. And with that spread and we can service those stores, we really are just looking for the best deals that makes the most sense, where we can get a good lease with a landlord. And so we kind of weigh those, but we also want to grow out from where we're already at. So I would expect not necessarily new states, but the stores would probably locate nearer to some of those locations we're already at.
What would you guesstimate your online sales are?
Online sales currently are minimal, which we have done that for a reason. We're kind of a closed-loop system. We want customers to buy from us. We turn around and sell it back to them. They turn around, trade, and sell it to us. Now, on the flip side, we are ramping up our website sales, and we're redesigning the website to be a little more mobile-friendly. We know that 80% of our sales off of our website is mobile. But, you know, the overall sales are basically less than 1%, but that is also a revenue growth and a new revenue stream that we can take advantage of going forward that we, by choice, have not invested in to actually bring that up. But with Live coming on and being owner of the company now and having people in-house who deal with that kind of stuff because of some of their previous companies, we have actually been able to take advantage to redesign our website, and we're getting ready to launch that. So there should be increased sales of online in the future.
Great. Okay, great. And
I think you got disconnected.
New equipment that you'll be able to bring on next year or the following years?
Sure.
Yeah, I'll address the marquee questions. Marquee, we've invested very heavily in Marquee in terms of replacement equipment and new equipment in both the extrusion and the twisting applications, both, as John indicated earlier, to limit and or reduce our third-party subcontracting expense and increase margin, but also to expand capacity. In talking with Tim Bailey today, the capacity is expected to be at least 25% more than it presently is, with which to be able to service customers. We also should see margin improvement in terms of the decrease in cost of goods sold relative to our insourcing of our twisting and extrusion capabilities. So we continue to see positive things coming out of Marquee. The other real growth area in Marquee is the sale of flooring and the expansion of our distribution business. We do not manufacture those products, but the products are very profitable, and the sales have been increasing steadily on a quarterly basis. So we expect that to continue.
There are numerous areas at the Marquee level that would allow us to spend some money on some growth CapEx, and this is what we've been doing since our acquisition. We acquired the company in the summer of 2015, and we've since invested millions and millions of dollars into growth CapEx. So we've seen some of those yield some very good results in this fiscal year that just ended, and we think that additional investments on the new extruder machines will show some more results, better results, even in the fiscal year of 2018
and beyond. This is long-term CapEx.
Yes, I mean those are very the ROIs on those are very, very favorable. We have the backing of Bank of America that's helping us finance a lot of this equipment. At a very, very low cost, I think somewhere south of 3-4% or somewhere in there. So we're very, very pleased with both companies and also their future outlook. We're very excited for 2018, especially with what's going on now with Vintage. Any more questions, Larry, before we move on?
Well, why don't you move on, and maybe I'll come back.
Okay.
And ask later on. Let somebody else ask.
Jacob from Wells Fargo Advisors.
A question, or the conversation on the Vintage stock acquisition. Just curious to know how you as a team assess kind of in the era of the Amazon age and, you know, more and more retail, it seems, assimilating into, you know, online sales, how you assess that, the implications of that to the Vintage stock business model, and kind of what you, you know, just how you assess kind of where retail sales are right now and kind of the implications of just the era that we're in with increased mobile sales and the, you know, the emergence of Amazon.
Rodney gets asked that question almost on a daily basis. Maybe I'll have him answer. I have my opinion of it, but maybe Rodney, why don't we hear from you on that, please?
Well, I will say that don't get caught too much in the headlines. There's people that are trying to push certain things, product lines, sites, things like that. Amazon's been around for a long time, so it's not a new competitor to us by any means. Netflix has been around a long time. Redbox, you know, you go through the list. So we compete well with all of them. You know, somebody comes in our store. The great thing is that we are instant gratification, and shoppers in general are instant gratification. That's what people want to do. It's almost a sport to go shopping, and people enjoy it. So it's never going to be completely online. And in fact, if you read the headlines, you would believe that, you know, online shopping accounts for probably half of all shopping, when in fact it's less than 15% of all shopping. So the big retail chains that you're seeing in trouble are mainly clothing, and you're also seeing the big boxes that really haven't changed in 15 or 20 years. They're doing the exact same thing they did, you know, at that time. We've changed product lines and things that we do. You know, we've been in business almost 40 years. We are profitable. We continue to be profitable. We make usually more money every year. If we're down, it's very little, but then we pop back the next year. So we definitely change and morph with the times. That's one reason that we're actually going to open up that revenue stream on online, because we are the biggest buyer of products in any market we're in. We will outbuy a GameStop. We will outbuy FYE, any of those sites that are buying product in, we are the biggest buyer in the market. And we buy more than we sell every day. That's why we have another revenue stream that is, you know, selling product off to rack jobbers that supply product to truck and travel and grocery stores and things like that. And we continue to see that business growing for us. And they're adding customers. So we expect that more product is actually going to be shifted out to supply those avenues. And if you look at some of the things that happened, you know, with Sony on PSP Go, it was a completely downloadable handheld video game system. It was the biggest flop in video game history. And Microsoft came out and said, hey, our Xbox One is going to be on all the time. And if you buy a game, it's going to be attached to that system. And you can't take that game or resell it or do anything. And the people went nuts. They had to change everything they were doing to release that system, and they were delayed. And honestly, that's why they're behind PS4 and Sony right now. Sony kind of learned their lesson, and they weren't going to go down that path. And Sony's outselling, you know, Microsoft and Xbox over 2-1. And Microsoft has not recovered. And they had the biggest online community for video games that was out there. You know, movies, it moves around. But again, as those companies have to pay for their content, and the movie industry has always been very good about guarding their revenue streams, as they started to have to pay for it, it's caused some issues. Netflix is, you know, creating their own content, which is massively expensive, and, you know, not sure when they're going to make money. But, you know, they'll keep doing that, but they can't afford to go out and buy all the movies. So what content they do have changes from time to time, because they can only afford to have it for a certain period of time. So, again, it's just a different sort of competition. We're not unaware of it. We adjust to all those things that happen in the market. But to believe that retail shopping is going to die in the way that they're talking about it is so far from the truth. But again, headlines, the way you read them, everything's sensationalized. And, you know, we're going to continue to do what we're doing. We'll take advantage of some of those other things. You know, like Amazon, we ship directly at people's house too. So if somebody comes in, there's that rare occurrence that we do not have it in our stores, which is almost never the occurrence, then we find it at one of our other stores or one of our suppliers, and we ship it directly to their home for free. So we know how to compete against these big players.
Is that it,
Great,
Jacob?
Thank you. Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Let's go to John Flynn.
Yes, I have another question for Mr. Johnson.
Sure.
Is he available?
Yes.
Oh, okay. With this new tax reform bill, what kind of impact do you expect that to have on Live Corporation?
That's a good question. I haven't studied it much. I've been too busy with the K.
Okay.
As I understand it, there will be, you know, possibly some reductions in corporate income taxes. I think that'll be bullish for Live.
Going forward, for sure.
Going forward, for sure. Historically, don't necessarily know, but I think going forward, any change in go-forward taxes and tax rates will be bullish for the company. Because we're at the maximum rate right now in terms of paying income tax. All of our income is domestic. So given this is a domestic change, it's going to be bullish for us.
Terrific. Thank you so much.
John Cosmer.
Hello, John. Hello, Roland.
Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Good to hear your voices. And my question was actually asked by the predecessor caller on the taxes, so I won't go down that road again. But just want to congratulate you guys again, having been with you, John and Tony, over the years since you began this. You know, it hasn't always been easy. Sounds easy now, but I appreciate what you've done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John, for your support.
Thank you,
appreciate
John.
That. Anyone else have any questions? I guess we'll be meeting again for the 10Q, which is expected
soon,
around mid-February usually.
Mid-February, yeah.
We'll have another call. Should we wait a minute here until we...
As a reminder, it is star and one if you have a question.
I think we're good.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate everyone's following of the company and investment into the company. We will be talking again very shortly, as John said, mid-February for our Q1 call, and talk with you then. Thank you.
Thank you.